fist and crushing his hand to a bloody pulp. But the gorilla merely let Grant's hand rest on her palm for a few moments. She stared at Grant, then at his hand. Slowly, she bent her head forward slightly and sniffed noisily at Grant's hand. Then she said,
"Grant,"
as if to fix his name in her memory. She pulled her hand away, and Grant let his arm drop to his side with a gusting sigh of relief. "We're going now, Sheena," Karlstad said, still in the tone that a man would use with a small child. Sheena thought that over for a few seconds.
"Yes," she said at last. "You go."
"Say goodnight to her," Karlstad told Grant. "Goodnight, Sheena."
"Grant,"
the gorilla answered.
"Grant."
Karlstad turned slowly and walked out of the gorilla's compartment, with Grant so close behind them they might have been Siamese twins. They headed back along the glowing fish tanks toward the hatch where they had entered the aquarium. Grant could hear the gorilla's heavy breathing and knew the beast was shuffling along behind them, not more than a step or two away. The dolphins seemed to be grinning at them as if they were enjoying the show. "This is the tricky part," Karlstad said softly as they walked slowly away from the gorilla. "Females don't usually attack, but when they do, it's when your back is to them." Grant felt his knees go rubbery.
"Don't look back," Karlstad cautioned. "If she decides to rush us, there's not a damn thing we can do about it."
His voice shaky, Grant heard himself ask, "Has she ever attacked anyone before?" Karlstad did not answer for several heartbeats. Then, "Not really attack, but she's so pissing strong she's broken people's ribs by accident."
"What? How was she able to talk?"
"Well, that's Woe's brilliant idea. Built a voice box for her, injected her brain with neuronal stem cells to see how much he could boost her intelligence." "Our intellectual cousins," Grant remembered. They had reached the hatch. Karlstad pushed it open and they stepped through. Grant helped to push it closed. He saw Sheena standing on all fours, so big that her shoulders brushed either wall of the narrow corridor. He felt a lot safer once the hatch clicked shut. "Sheena's a long way from being an intellectual cousin," Karlstad said, his voice louder now, firmer, as they started walking briskly back toward their quarters.
"But she talks," Grant said. "She can obviously think.
To a degree. Like a 2-year-old, that's all. There isn't enough room in her cranium to grow a human-equivalent brain."
"I see."
Karlstad laughed grimly.
"Yeah, Woe wanted to open up her skull, enlarge it so there'd be more room for cerebral growth."
"What happened?" Sheena was smart enough to recognize what was going on. As soon as she entered the surgical theater, she tore loose and ran away. That's when she broke ribs, arms too.
She understood what was going to happen?
You bet. She ran back to her own quarters and no one could coax her out. Woe wanted to sedate her and go ahead with the surgery, but the medical staff was so banged up that it was impossible.
And he didn't try again?
Not yet, said Karlstad,
but he will.
Wily old Woeful doesn't give up.
Not him.
The corridor was down to its nighttime lighting, Grant realized. Most of the research station's personnel were in their quarters or already asleep. No one in sight except a middle-aged couple strolling hand in hand through the twilight dimness toward them.
"So we have a gorilla roaming around loose back there?" Grant asked.
Karlstad did not reply until the approaching couple passed them. Then, his voice lowered, he answered, "Sheena works as a guard for the aquarium."
"Why does the aquarium need a guard?"
"It doesn't. It's all Woe's brilliant idea," Karlstad said, still in a near whisper. "He carted the animal all the way out here when she was an infant, so he's got to show some practical reason for the expense."
Grant shook his head in wonder.
"Well, at least there's one advantage to Sheena's limited brain power."
"What's that?"
"She can clean out her own cage," Karlstad said. "And she's toilet trained."
He laughed.
You should have seen the mess she made the first time she squatted on a regular toilet. We had to build a specially reinforced bowl for her.
I guess so, Grant said, not wanting to visualize the scene. When he got to his own room and slid the door shut, Grant considered sending a message back to Ellis Beach's office on Earth. Dolphins and gorillas are intellectual cousins. Then he thought that the new morality must know about that already. Woe couldn't smuggle a gorilla into the station in total secrecy, even a baby gorilla. And dolphins? Besides, he thought tiredly, what does it all add up to? Why did Dr. Woe bring these animals here? What's he up to? That's what I've got to find out. That's my ticket out of here. My ticket back to Marjorie and Farside. It wasn't until he was in bed and drifting towards sleep that he realized Karlstad had tricked him. Meeting Sheena must be one of the initiation rites around here, he thought. I wonder how many guys have fainted from sheer fright or wet themselves. Thinking about it, Grant thought he'd acquitted himself pretty well. Not much for Karlstad to tell the others about, he thought. There's an advantage in being so scared you can't move, he realized. When Grant finally dozed off, his first night on Research Station Gold, he slept fitfully, dreaming of gorillas chasing him while Dr. Woe growled and glared angrily. Marjorie appeared in his dreams briefly, but somehow she changed into tall, slim Laney smiling at him, beckoningly. He tried to move away from her, but Sheena blocked his path. Grant felt trapped and alone, beyond help. A buzzing noise blurred his dreams, insistent, demanding. He pried his gummy eyelids open and for a moment had no idea of where he was. Then it came into focus, his quarters on Gold. His bedsheets were tangled and soaked with his perspiration. With a lurch in the pit of his stomach, Grant realized he had made a nocturnal emission. It's all right, he told himself, while that stubborn buzzing noise kept rasping in his ears. Wet dreams are natural, beyond your conscious control. There's nothing sinful about them as long as you don't take pleasure from the memory. The buzzing would not stop. Grant slowly realized it was the phone. He could see its yellow light on the bedside console blinking at him in rhythm with the angry buzzing. Phone, he called out, audio response only. The screen on the opposite wall lit up to show Zarab Muzarawa's dark, somber face. Have I awakened you? Muzarawa asked. Yes, Grant replied. I guess I overslept. That's natural, your first morning here. Ask the pharmacy for the time lag hormone mix. It will set your internal clock for you. Oh, really? Okay, I will. I've been assigned to your orientation, Muzarawa said, his voice more businesslike. How quickly can you get to conference room C, as in Charlie? Still blinking sleep from his eyes, Grant said, 15 minutes? Muzarawa smiled, showing gleaming white teeth. I will give you half an hour. Get to the pharmacy first, then meet me there. Yes, sir, said Grant. Grant spent the entire morning in a small conference room with Muzarawa, his head spinning with details. The day was a blur of orientation videos, schematics of the station's layout, organization charts of the staff personnel, lists of duties that the various departments were responsible for. Grant had thought he'd known the station's layout and organization from his months of study on the trip out, but apparently most of his information had been terribly out of date. Let's break for lunch, Muzarawa said, pushing his chair back from the small oval conference table. The wall screen went blank, and the stuffy little room's overhead lights came on. Fine, said Grant, getting to his feet. As they headed for the cafeteria, Grant noticed that Muzarawa seemed to be lurching as he walked. Not staggering exactly, but the man walked with a hesitant, slightly uncertain gait, as if afraid that he was about to bump into some unseen obstacle or stumble drunkenly into a wall. He was clad in another turtleneck pullover shirt that hung loosely over the same bulky-looking black leather leggings with metal studs running down their outer seams. His feet were shod in what appeared to be soft moccasins. Most of the station's other scientific personnel wore casual shirts and slacks, as Grant himself did. The engineers and technicians usually wore coveralls that were